Hello, good evening. I'm Lina Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Happy New Year 2019. It is the new year, and we hope that you had a wonderful time celebrating the holiday season with your friends and family. Well, the holiday season is part of a so-called kissing season in America. Health experts say, although it may seem harmless, kissing can spread some viruses and bacteria. Cold sores, mononucleosis, the common cold, and the flu are top infectious viruses that can easily be spread through kissing. For more on the subject today, we are joined in our studio in New York by Georgia Pasetis. She's a pharmacist and nutraceuticals meets pharmaceuticals integration expert. Ms. Pasetis, welcome to Health Chat.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here at the height of all these viruses being spread.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that they call this season the kissing season, right? Can you tell us a little bit about this? Who came up with this idea of the kissing season and why?
Yes. So between, I would say, you know, Christmas, New Year, St. Patrick's Day and Valentine's Day, you know, there's all these seasons where we're coming across our family members and those we're close with, and we're exchanging a lot of kisses via on the cheek or on the lips. And unfortunately, coming in this close contact with people can spread a lot of viruses, which are very contagious.
We will have our discussion in a moment, but first, the flu season is in full swing here in the United States. VOA's Ana Mateo has this report.
United States health officials say an estimated 80,000 people died of influenza and problems resulting from the flu last winter. The director for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported the number to the Associated Press. It represents the largest number of flu deaths nationwide in at least 40 years. Health experts were expecting the winter of 2017 to 2018 to be a bad year for flu deaths, but not that bad. Dr. William Schaffner is an expert on vaccines. He works at Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. Schaffner noted that 80,000 deaths is nearly two times as much as what health officials once considered a bad year. CDC officials say that between 12,000 and 56,000 Americans die every year from flu-related causes. While 80,000 deaths seems high, the exact number could be even higher. CDC officials do not have an exact count of how many people die from the flu each year. Influenza is a relatively common disease, and not all flu cases are reported. Also, flu is not always listed on death records as the official cause of death. For that reason, the CDC must estimate the number of dead based on statistical models. While last winter was a bad flu season in the U.S., it was not the worst. The 1918 flu pandemic lasted nearly 2 years. Historians estimate that the disease was to blame for between 500,000 to 700,000 deaths during that period. The exact number is still not known. One thing that made the 2017-2018 flu season so bad was that the strain of the flu virus was strong. Usually, the disease kills the very young, the very old, or those who are already sick. However, last winter, the flu killed many healthy Americans. Another thing that made the flu season so deadly was that the flu vaccine was not as effective as experts had predicted. In a 2017 statement to the press, the World Health Organization said that every year, up to 650,000 deaths are connected with influenza or influenza-related illnesses. This is a new estimate by the U.S. CDC, the WHO, and global health partners. This is more than the global estimate from 10 years ago. At that time, experts estimated that between 250,000 to 500,000 people died from influenza or influenza-related illnesses. Back in the U.S., health officials are predicting a weaker strain of flu virus this coming winter. Drug makers have made changes to the vaccine. Even though the vaccine did not work well last year, health experts still strongly suggest getting vaccinated. I'm Ana Mateo.
And Georgia Pasadis, you heard the report. Flu season is really affecting so many people during this time of the year. Let me have your reaction on this package and tell us a little bit about how common the flu is.
Yeah, and I think that we are at a time where the flu is extremely widespread. And in general, the flu is very unpredictable. So the exact timing of duration and who it's going to affect is very hard to target. But I think the key thing that was mentioned here is it's still important to get vaccinated. The CDC is still recommending that everyone, especially those at high risk, like the elderly and those who have, suppressed immune systems, should be getting the flu vaccine still. Although it might seem like we're at the end of it, we're still actually at the height of it, and it could go into late May with flu still being at an all-time high.
So let's talk about transmission and how easy it is to get infected with the flu. We talked about kissing earlier. Kissing is obviously one of the ways.
Yes, absolutely. So exchanging of any type of bodily fluids like saliva can spread these viruses. And influenza, like all the other viruses, can be spread through saliva. And so when you kiss somebody, it's very easy to spread saliva. Even if you were to, you know, cough and you had that, mucus on your hands, and then you went and you wiped somebody's face or their hands, you could potentially still transmit that virus. So it's very important during this time of the year to be very vigilant, wash your hands very well, because these viruses can be easily spread through an innocent kiss or even just wiping, your hand onto somebody else's.
And the flu is something that sometimes I don't think that a lot of people realize how dangerous it could become once somebody is infected, because we think we can take some over-the-counter medicine and it will disappear. But just to speak from personal experience, my sister went through something where she had to be taken by the ambulance to the emergency room, and I was like, just for the flu? But it was very, very serious. So can you just give us a sense of how critical this condition is? Because some people don't seem to take it seriously. When you talk about vaccination, they say, oh, no, I don't need to get vaccinated. I can just take a few pills or something and get over it in case one gets infected.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, like you said, there's a misconception out there that they don't really have to get the flu shot. But I recommend that everyone get the flu shot unless it's not recommended by your physician, especially those at high risk. And even sometimes, like we saw, like you were saying about your sister and these children, they weren't really high risk. They were healthy patients. Mm-hmm. They just happened to be infected with that specific flu strain. And this season, that predominant strain is one of the nastiest that we know of. It's the H3N2 strain. And that causes the worst outbreaks of influenza type A and type B. And unfortunately, it's not just those who are sick that get it. It could be anybody who's healthy. So it's important that we all get our flu vaccine. And that's why the CDC is still recommending, even though we seem to be coming down the height of flu season, mm-hmm. that we still get our vaccine, especially those who are at high risk, like the elderly.
Now, let's talk about another type of virus that seems to be very common, and it's commonly referred to as cold sores or fever blisters, also known as oral herpes. Tell us about that.
So cold sores or fever blisters, like you said, are caused by a virus called HSV-1. And actually, HSV-1 is extremely common. Globally, according to the World Health Organization, 2/3 of our population has the infection HSV-1. So they have that virus. Now, doesn't mean that every single person's going to get an outbreak, but we know that that virus is living within their nerve, and different things like a suppressed immune system, even something like hot or cold weather, stress can activate and cause an outbreak. And that's what, people can spread. But even if you don't have an active infection, meaning that you actually are showing the blister on your lips or around your mouth, you could have something called viral shedding, and you could still spread that virus to people. So it's really important, if you do know that you have the HSV-1 virus, the best that you can, not kiss others, not be exchanging towels or drinking glasses or even forks, because the virus can actually live on inanimate objects like forks and water bottles.
That's interesting. So it's a very common type of virus,
And the virus can be dormant, and someone may not necessarily show an outbreak, a pimple or anything, but they can still be contagious?
Yes, correct. And that's why it's very important that once you know you've been exposed to and that you have the virus, that you're very careful and you're vigilant around children, especially because children mm-hmm. are at an all-time risk because of the fact that they're younger, they have more of a suppressed immune system. They're being exposed to a lot of viruses, to not be kissing young children and making sure that if you know you have that virus, although you might not be currently having an outbreak, to be very vigilant about, you know, sharing bottles and wine glasses and drinking, you know, and utensils with other people, even if you don't have the outbreak, because you can have viral shedding when that virus is living dormant within your nerve.
So can people have it and not know it?
Yes, absolutely. Most people, believe it or not, are exposed to HSV-1 and cold sores when they're young. And most people, not until they're probably in their high school to early young adulthood, actually get their first outbreak. So people can be exposed to it at a very young age and go all the way until their teens or 20s and not get an actual outbreak. So, you know, it's something that lives within you, and not everybody will get that outbreak. Some might be exposed to it as a child or a teenager and never get an outbreak their entire life, and that virus will just live dormant within them.
Sounds very annoying to say
it is,
that,
and it's scary because you don't know, like, can I give it to somebody? Should
yes.
I just be careful only when I have a blister? And it's one of those situations, because I suffer from them myself as well, that you're always having to be a little bit more careful than the average person who's never been exposed to them.
Now, one of the problems that people come across, and one of the reasons that they may not share an information with perhaps a partner or even talk about it. You just said it so easily that you have it. And then some people are afraid or ashamed of stigma. Is it the type of virus that comes with a lot of stigma, or because it's so common that people don't really care?
No, you hit the nail on the head. There is a lot of stigma associated with cold sores and fever blisters. And one of the top ones being that mostly women get it. And actually, according to the statistics from the World Health Organization, the split is pretty much 50-50. Those across Europe, Africa, and the U.S., both men and women are having rates very similar to one another. So that stigma is associated with it too. Like, oh my gosh, like, you know, it's already embarrassing enough that you have a blister now that everybody's thinking, oh, it's, you know, it's happening only to women. Mm-hmm. So that's a big stigma associated with it. And in general, the stigma is associated with intimate contact. People think you only get it from, you know, intimacy. And that's not necessarily the case. You can get it from sharing a drinking glass with somebody or a water bottle or even using a contaminated towel at the gym.
So given that they're also called fever blister, is it something that I know you talked about it earlier, but you will get an outbreak when you are sick or you are stressed? I mean, are there triggers? What are the triggers? I guess that's what my question is.
Yeah, and you that's exactly right. A lot of the times people think of it, oh, I only am going to get a cold sore when I have the cold or I have a fever coming on. And typically that's where the name came from. It was associated with when you had a cold, because when you have a cold, you have a suppressed immune system. So anytime you have a suppressed immune system, you have the chance of getting an outbreak, because that's when the virus can rear its head, because your system is not able to fight it off because you are, you know, having a cold or the flu, or you might have a fever. But the triggers really are, you know, the onset of a suppressed immune system, anything that could really change the temperature in the environment. So sometimes when you go on vacation and it's super hot and you're exposing yourself to the sun, you can get an outbreak, which is unfortunately the worst thing that could happen, but it happens. Now, if you're living in the Northeast, we have a nor'easter over here. You know, the cold weather, if you're walking outside and that cold weather hits you, that virus can actually be activated by cold weather. So things like that, your immune system being suppressed, the weather, and also being stressed out. You know, we're all running around, we're working, we're busy people. It's really important to, you know, to the best of your ability, trying to stay calm, meditate, you know, eat a healthy diet, and really try to keep your overall well-being up.
So what are the treatment options for cold sores?
So cold sores have some treatment options. And the good thing is that a lot of them are over the counter. So you can go to your local pharmacy or, you know, your neighborhood store and grab them, or even order it on Amazon. Now everything's available on Amazon. I'm a cold sore sufferer, and I've worked with this company called Abio, and they make a cold sore treatment gel. And it's this great smooth gel that you can put on there, and it has lidocaine in it. So cold sore sufferers know what I'm talking about. You get this like itching, burning sensation that's usually, you know, on the actual sore itself, but it might even radiate around the sore. And that lidocaine in the Abio cold sore treatment gel really helps soothe that. And also, it has aloe in it, so it's very soothing. Another big misconception and things that people always think to do is to dry out a cold sore. That's the worst thing that you can do. Mm-hmm. Don't put anything on there that could dry it out. You really want to keep it moist. And by using something like Abio cold sore treatment gel, you're really keeping it nice and moist, which helps it heal a lot faster. And then taking something like lysine. Lysine is an amino acid. You can buy it over the counter. It's available at your local drugstore. And you can take that once every single day and to really kind of decrease the amount of outbreaks that you get per year. But unfortunately, if you are somebody who gets a variety of cold sore outbreaks per year, you can go and see your physician and maybe get some prescription treatment options.
Well, it's time for a short break. We'll have more of our conversation in a moment, so don't go away.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Welcome back to Health Chat. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are looking at kissing and some of the viruses and bacteria that can be spread through kissing and how to better protect ourselves against these viruses and bacteria. And our guest is Georgia Pasedis. She is a pharmacist and nutraceuticals, meat pharmaceuticals integration expert.
Georgia, let's talk about another type of virus that when I read just the name, I never heard that before, and I was just taken aback. It is mononucleosis. It sounds very scary. What is it?
Yes. So mono, again, is another type of virus, and it's caused by a virus called the Epstein-Barr virus. And this is one of those viruses that can become very complicated if you don't initially recognize that you have it. Unfortunately, there's no true treatment options. There's no vaccinations for mono. And it's not at a high spread the way that flu or the cold is, but it's definitely out there. And it used to be known as the kissing disease. Maybe you heard of it when you were younger, but I don't think a lot of us adults think of it anymore. But it's still actually very common, and it is being spread even from your high schoolers coming home and exposing you to it. You know, if they're coughing and sneezing and giving you a hug, you could potentially get it yourself. It's not just, you know, what the stigma has, which is for middle schoolers and high schoolers.
Wow, that's incredible. But I honestly, when I was younger, I didn't hear about it. So why is it called the kissing disease? Is it because that's the most common way of catching it?
Exactly. And back then when they named it, it was at an all-time high amongst high schoolers who were kissing a variety of different people. And we started noticing that in certain schools, there was a high rate of mono. And that's really where the name came from. And that's where the whole concept of the kissing disease came from, is because the main way that it was being spread was through kissing at the time. But again, it could be spread through other things other than kissing. So it's really important that if you are getting symptoms like extreme fatigue, or you're feeling sick, but it doesn't feel like your common cold, you might have a fever associated with it, but you can't seem to knock it, you know, after those 7 to 14 days. And then it might be associated with things like an enlarged spleen. You might be having other, you know, issues that might be associated. And that's when you know it's time to go see a doctor. You might need some additional supportive care.
But these symptoms that you described are so common with other conditions.
Exactly. And that's why it's so hard to actually recognize it and go and seek medical attention. And I tell people, if it's usually fatigue that you just cannot seem to get yourself out of bed at all, and you just can't seem to just get it together because you're so tired and your body is painful, it's most likely something like the flu or mono. And it's pretty much, you have a good chance of saying that it's not going to be the just the common cold, which is usually associated with like coughing and sneezing and, you know, sinus pain. These things like mono and the flu are associated with much, you know, different symptoms like fever, extreme fatigue. And so if you do get something like that and it doesn't go away within that period of time, like a week or 2 weeks, I would definitely go see a physician because you might, you know, be experiencing dehydration and you might need to get additional supportive care.
So would you say that the youth, the younger people are more more at risk of it, or it's just a misconception because a lot of high schoolers used to have it?
I think that they are at a greater risk because of the fact that most kids are running around, you know, they have a ton of activities and, you know, they're kissing a lot more partners than I think you and I might be on a monthly basis.
Okay.
So they definitely are exposing themselves a lot more than maybe say you or I were. So I do think that they are at a higher risk. Data shows that, you know, although they are at a higher risk and the highest rates, it doesn't necessarily mean that other adults cannot get the actual monovirus.
It's incredible to hear that they're kissing more people than adults, but I guess that calls for another, that's an entire different show.
Yes, it is. That's an entirely different show with a whole set of data.
Absolutely. So what is the recommended treatment for mono?
So mono, unfortunately, you're just alleviating the symptoms. There's no true treatment options. So to, you know, really help with those body aches and the fatigue, you can take things like over-the-counter ibuprofen or Tylenol to help with that fever. And then doing things like drinking, you know, low sugar orange juice so you can get that vitamin C, and taking things like vitamin C, vitamin D, or just a multivitamin to really help boost your immune system is really vital when you have a virus like mono, because what's happening is that your body's really just trying to fight off this virus. And so anything you can do to boost your immune system, like taking a multivitamin or vitamin C, vitamin D, even things like probiotics are really great because it helps normalize your body's bacteria.
Okay, now let's talk about another virus, which is very common, which is the common cold. So the common cold, obviously, just like the use of the term common is so common. And yet we can talk about it because, of course, when people have a cold, they are sick, they're not feeling well, but also ways to prevent transmission and to address it. Can you enlighten us about the transmission of the common cold and how can we prevent it? It's so easy to catch it.
It is. And the cold is caused by a variety of viruses, but the most common virus that it's caused by is the rhinovirus. So we really associate it with more with upper respiratory viruses. So that's why you see things like coughing and sneezing. But the best way to prevent getting the common cold, believe it or not, is just hand washing. Really making sure that you're washing your hands, that you're being vigilant around people who are coughing and sneezing. Don't hold hands with them. And really try to avoid touching anything that they've been coughing or sneezing on, like their jackets, their scarves, because really contamination is very, very easy. And that's why we see or we hear the word common, because it's very easily spread. And the other thing you can do is really just being vigilant, looking out for those telltale signs. So if you see somebody with a slightly runny nose or their nose is a little red and they keep sneezing, they most likely have a cold. A lot of people going into like March and April say, oh, no, it's just my allergies.
Allergies, yeah, I know.
But it's actually most likely still a cold. We're still at the height of the cold season. Like we said about the flu, we're still at the height of the cold season. So you could still be getting a cold. It's not, you know, quite out of the realm yet. So you're not out of the woods yet. So you could still have a cold. So if you're coughing and sneezing and it's greater than, you know, 2 or 3 days, you most likely have a cold.
And tell us how the common cold and cold sores are related.
So the way that they're related and the way that the name cold sores came about was from people who were getting sick and getting the cold and getting the virus for the cold had suppressed immune systems. And then they realized that because of that, people were getting outbreaks, and those fever blisters, you know, or cold sores were associated with having a higher fever or having, you know, being sick or having the cold. So the two are associated really through the immune system. When your immune system is suppressed, when you're sick, having, you know, the virus that causes the cold, you can then be at greater risk for getting a cold sore. And so when you are sick, the important thing to do is really try to right away boost your immune system, drink your orange juice, take additional vitamin C, and then that way you can hopefully maybe avoid getting a cold sore, because the two unfortunately are just related through the fact that your immune system's tired, it's fighting, and it can't fight off both the dormant virus living that causes cold sores and fight the cold itself.
Now, something that I read that I found was enlightening is the fact that cold sores, it's not just transmitted through kissing. You mentioned that before. And they can also be transmitted through sharing drinks, utensils, towels, razor, and other personal items.
Yes, and that's why I tell everybody it's very important, not only just for cold sores, but for all other viruses, do not share things with your friends or family. I know we all love one another and we want to share things, but you know, utensils are actually something that you spread a lot of saliva on, right? Because if you're eating from a fork, you're most likely putting it in your mouth. And when you put it in your mouth, you're getting saliva all over it. Then if you share that fork with your friend or family and you have a cold sore, you have the cold or flu, you could very easily get them sick. So even things like a towel at the gym, I tell people don't use the same towels, use disposable, you know, paper if you can to wipe down equipment. Using towels can really contaminate you and, you know, very easily spread it to somebody else.
Okay, so we are getting ready to wrap the show, but before we do that, let's take us a little bit through some basic steps. How can we minimize the spread of oral herpes, mono, and the common cold without having even without having to avoid kissing, if possible, altogether?
Yes,
some basic steps.
I think air kissing is okay. We can start there. Do some air kisses from cheek to cheek. Air hugs, those always work. But on a more serious note, I think making sure that we're boosting our immune systems throughout the entire year. So that way, when the season does come at the height of the cold sore, cold and flu season, that you're already prepared. And making sure that you're maintaining taking vitamins every day. I suggest everybody take vitamins on a daily basis, take a multivitamin, and then during the high seasons between October and May, really load up on additional vitamin C and vitamin D. And then if you do get an outbreak of a cold sore, you know there are treatment options like Abio cold sore treatment gel, using lysine, the amino acid, and then also still taking vitamins. And then for the cold and flu and mono, it's really a virus that you're alleviating symptoms. So taking things like Motrin, Tylenol, and then still taking those vitamins to boost your immune system is a great option.
And real quick, where can we find more information on the everything you talked about, the treatment and everything?
Everything is found on the CDC website as well as the World Health Organization. And you can also follow me on Twitter for day-to-day, debriefs on additional tips.
Georgia Pacedis, thank you so much for joining us. That was great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank today's guest, pharmacist Georgia Pacedis. For more on today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. Also, log on to facebook.com/voahealthchat. And let's keep the conversation going. You can also email us your questions or reactions to healthchat@voanews.com. I'm your host, Lino Armudu in Washington, with producer Bonsa Tufa. Until next time. Take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.